Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more.
Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Hicks, or the host of the podcast, depending on how long you've been listening for, and our guest slash Predictable Revenue team member, Carrie White. We'll get to intros in just a second, but wanted to talk a little bit about why I'm back on the show for a day or maybe a couple episodes, because we're here to talk about the methodology that we've been grinding away on for probably about a year and a half. And the goal was to take the elements from Predictable Revenue, the book, update them and mix them in with how we've been running our team, our coaching practice, and just get them out there so that we can kind of live the value of, like, we want to share this with everybody. We don't want to just hang on to it. So we're bringing it to the podcast. We're going to be putting it on our website. We're going to be producing a whole bunch of content around it. So if there's things that are missing, let us know, reach out, hit us up on LinkedIn or your favorite social channel. Fair warning, I don't pay attention to any of them other than LinkedIn and maybe Twitter occasionally. So that's the best place to reach out. Before we get into the content of what is this methodology, what are we talking about? Let's do some intros. If you haven't heard from me before, my name's Colin. I'm one of the founders here and the CEO. I wrote, I'd say, the bones of the podcast or of the podcast of the methodology and brought in a bunch of other people to kind of to actually write it and contribute. I think I probably, my contributions were more on the principles side. We'll get into, like, there's principles and there's the playbook. So that's probably where my contributions came from. I'm joined today by Sarah. Sarah, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself for all of those who already know you anyway?
Yeah, absolutely can do. So my name is Sarah Hicks. I am the lead coach at Predictable Revenue and also our podcast host, as Colin mentioned. So I've been kicking around Predictable Revenue for a good few years now, and I've really grown up through all of the pieces of this methodology, starting with the real prospector SDR role into SDR management, and then now into coaching and consulting. So helping our clients implement all of the stuff that we're going to share with you in their own in-house outbound engines. And my teammate and lovely leader is Carrie White.
Thank you, Sarah. Yes, I am thrilled to be here. This is my first official podcast with PR, and I joined about 3 months ago from a tenure at many years at IBM. I spent probably a couple decades actually at IBM and did everything from software to hardware sales to management to sales coaching and training, and then left and have been at about three or four different startups. And I found Predictable Revenue, and I think in a way it found me. And so it's a match made in heaven, and really looking forward to today's session and what we have in store for you all.
That's so nice. Well, we're so happy to have you on the podcast. So nice to have another Predictable Revenue face that joins Colin and I. We've been holding down the fort for what feels like many, many years. So it's so nice to have a fresh face joining us. Okay, Colin. So we're going to talk about this Predictable Revenue methodology, the new sales development methodology, and we're talking about it in a little bit of a different way than we talked about it before. If anybody had kind of seen the first iteration that we released maybe about a year ago, we focused on really the tactical aspects, but there's something a little special and a little different that we've added in to this version of it. So Colin, tell me about that piece.
Yeah, I think when we first started, when we first built, the first iteration of this was just a hot piece of garbage. It was, I was like, we can turn it into a formula. You know, I think I read Isaac Asimov's The Foundation, and I was like, everything could be a formula and we could just, like, formula the universe. And we tried, and there was a tool on our site you could do that, and it was just awful. I mean, it got most of the ideas down on paper, but it was, we did a training internally, and Lavinia did an amazing job of trying to train people on the gobbledygook that spilled out of my brain. And it was just awful. And I was like, Lavinia, I'm like, this training is awful. Like, you did a great job, but the content is just monstrously bad. And it was just, it had all the right ideas, but it was not clear. And so I think what we've learned through putting this through its paces and trying to teach people and trying to make sure that we're all operating off of the same playbook is the fact that we needed to define the kind of the core ideas, the core principles that go into building a revenue team, and then separate those from the tactics of how to build a sales development team. Because we found, I mean, we've booked thousands of meetings, like thousands and thousands of meetings, probably 10,000 or more meetings if you did the math. Yeah, like we've worked with over, it's probably over 10 or 20,000. Yeah, well, yeah. Anyway, won't get into the stats, but we've booked a lot of meetings. We've hired a ton of SDRs. We've helped like 1,000 companies build outbound teams. And so I remember in the beginning, like I come from sales, but the last 10 years I spent trying to build products, and I was trying to find the thing. And I would interview our customers and I'd say, okay, well, what is the characteristic that if a customer has this, they're going to be a great customer. And I was like, I'm looking for these silver bullets that I can, you know, just package up and then be like, okay, Rev team, go find exactly these customers, which is, you know, exactly what we tell everybody. And it was really interesting because we were doing it for ourselves, but we're also getting a chance to meet all these individuals that were trying to build their first revenue channel, or maybe their second, maybe their first scalable revenue channel. And the thing that it came down to, you know, when I looked at successful customers, unsuccessful customers, was product market fit. And that was really the first moment that outside of this playbook, and I mean, it's so obvious when you look at revenue as a system, that there are all these sort of upstream things like product market fit, positioning, the pace that a company wants to move. Like if they're venture backed or bootstrapped, like they're going to have different resources to apply to the strategy. And like all of these things have downstream impacts, and there's a feedback loop that if you're not paying attention to it, if you're not watching it, if you're not like actually listening to that feedback loop, it can go wrong. And to me, it was, I mean, honestly, it took years to get here, but it was just one of those important pieces that we wanted to share. And so when you're looking at the first couple of that first section, when we talk about that, and you're like, why do all these things that seem like table stakes, why are they all at the beginning? It's like, well, these are the things that you need before you can really start building a playbook. And that was what we were trying to convey. And there'll be a different podcast on like, well, you know, how do you start if I'm an entrepreneur and it's just me and I'm trying to like build my first, or I'm trying to do this customer development, like where do these customers come from? That's a different podcast. I've written a blog post. Well, we can talk about it later. I think the important piece is that there's a delineation of like the core principles of the things that you need before. And then once you've got those in check, once you've like ticked all the boxes, then you can move into the practice and building the playbook. So that's kind of the long version to the short question of like, why two different? Why did you separate the playbook into two sections?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And what are those three strategic elements that you've kind of layered in as that first piece?
Yeah. So the first one I kind of mentioned, product market fit. We're calling it positioning because referring to it as positioning because we know we're speaking to revenue leaders and in some cases entrepreneurs and founders, CEOs, but by the time a revenue leader has their hands on it, you probably should have product market fit, but you often don't, or, you know, maybe you have product market fit in one market, but it's not well positioned. And so framing it up as positioning within that context just made it a little bit more actionable for the sales leader, because that's who we're really speaking to, is the sales and revenue leader. And so the first piece is positioning, and it's all to do with your product market fit, the market you're in, what makes you unique, how relevant is that to the audience that you're selling to. And then once you're, and honestly, like if this is that like monopoly step, like do not pass go, do not collect $200, right? Like if you don't have product market fit, everything downstream is going to be multiplied by zero. So if you want to like, if you want to take these three sections and like multiply these three, you know, score of 1 to 10, multiply them together, that's going to be your overall effectiveness. And then however you could nail like to aces all the way down when you get to the playbook. But if you get a zero in one of these three things, a 0 out of 10, or even a 1 or 2 or 3 out of 10, it's going to have a downstream impact on the performance of your entire team. And it's going to frustrate the shit out of your revenue team. And I know because I've had my revenue team do this for things that don't have product market fit. And I think Sarah remembers specific campaigns where we're like, Sarah, this is a thing. This is a real market. There's an audience. We've got customers here. And you went and like hustled hard. And you came back like a month later. I mean, obviously you didn't go on this journey in the desert and then come back empty handed with no water, just like beaten up. But it was similar.
All that way.
Yeah. And so that, go ahead.
No, you go.
That first piece is positioning, right? And the second piece is the pace. And this piece recognizes that companies have different amounts of money to invest. You have different financial strategies. I'm going to talk to a bootstrap company very differently than a company that just raised $108 million. Like, it's the same methodology, but you're going to apply it differently. You're going to spend differently. It's a very different mindset. And so all the things in that pace are really just calibrating what is from the point of, okay, based in the context of your positioning, of your market, of your product market fit, and the financial strategy of your company, how much do you want to invest? How quickly do you need to move? What can you afford to do, right? If we're talking about, you know, you have a product that's worth $1,000 a year, you're probably not talking sales development. Right. If you're talking about a product that's $1 million a year, we're probably talking closer to that like ABM style of sales development. If it's more towards the $25,000 annual contract value, then we're probably talking more personalized at scale. And so the pace is both is where you kind of blend the market with how much you want to spend and how quickly you want to move, and figuring out what styles of sales development you can afford to implement, how much you can afford to invest to acquire a customer. And then the practice is just, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is that last step where it's like, how well does the team work together? Do you have all the things that you need from the marketing, from the sales, from the revenue, from, you know, however you structure your revenue, your product team? Does your website say the things, you know, that, you know, you're going to email a prospect and they're going to go look at your website and be like, oh yes, this website is congruent with the email that I saw. And like, you're probably listening, or you could be listening and thinking, shock, like who would do that? Lots of people do that. This is why it exists as part of the methodology. And that's the very, very high level. I'll shut up in a minute and let us get into some of the tactics, and we can come back to some of the deeper details of this later. But really that's if you were to give yourself a score, and just pause for a minute and give yourself a score, 1 to 10 or 0 to 10, because if you don't have one of these things, multiplies by 0. If you don't have product market fit, multiplies by 0. And just, okay, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 10, multiply them together. You get a score I can't do math, but let's just say you get a score out of whatever, and then figure out what the total score is. I really should have done the math of like 10 times 30. 10 times 10.
Oh, they multiply by each other.
I was like, how many zeros? Yeah, 10 times 10 times 10, 1,000, right?
10 times 10 is 100. Times 10 is 1,000, yeah.
1,000, okay. I was like, it's
not big math guys here on this podcast. Math podcast.
It's hard to speak and do math at the same time when you're trying to carry a thought.
You don't have to tell me, Colin.
Okay, so you're going to get a score out of 1,000. This is thank God it's not a math podcast. You get scored of 1,000, and that's like divided by 1,000, that's your relative effectiveness, right? So if you get 799, that turns into 79.9%. And that's a loose indication of how, you know, the sort of maximum effectiveness that your playbook will be, right? And so I just wanted to point out the absolute like critical importance of these top three things. With that being said, they're things that hopefully most of us that are listening already have. So I can shut the hell up. And we can transition into like, well, what does that playbook look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the piece that Carrie and I are going to really speak to. Carrie's going to talk to kind of the strategic importance of the elements of that playbook. And I'll speak to the actual sort of tactical execution of those pieces. That's kind of what we're living and breathing in our roles of predictable revenue. Carrie being, the SVP of the coaching consulting, basically the whole thing, but for the purposes of this, her role as leader of that whole side. And for me as one of those coaches, and just to give you a little context on what this playbook is, it's like a facet of that practice element that Colin's talking about. The three layers at the top that we're talking about with the positioning, pace, and practice, the playbook lives inside practice. This is how you go out and do the things that we're saying in the beginning there. So Carrie, talk to me about the first element of the playbook. Mm-hmm. Tell me what it is and like why it's there.
Yeah. So the first element, and I love what you've all said, right? Your three P's, right? We've got the positioning, the pace, the practice. Again, we're diving into the practice piece here. And the first part of it is all about focus and targeting. And so the biggest thing is, and Colin, you mentioned this earlier, is mindset. And mindset is huge. And that has to come in with you from a strategic perspective and how you target the right customers, the right personas, the right contacts, and ultimately take that ideal customer profile that you're really seeking and translating that into mean value for them. Whatever it is that you're selling or positioning in the market, it's how are you targeting what it is that you're selling, how you want to sell it to those people that are ultimately going to be your ideal customer profile. And that's all about giving you headlights. If you don't have that mindset going in and you don't actually figure out the target buyer personas, those accounts, their segment, their size, and focus in some way or other, you're going to be all over the map. And we've seen this actually very recently with a customer of ours who wanted to use us for, you know, outsourcing their entire sales development team. And within the first month, going, you guys don't have a, you know, you don't know exactly what your target customer profile is. You don't really understand the two or three key industries or segments you want to go after, and let alone the resources that you want to be able to use to help you to tease them to become interested, obviously. So it's kind of a stay in your lane. It's a headlights approach and it's a mindset approach, but it's all about targeting and it's massive in terms of how you have to start.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first element that we always teach in what we call our outbound foundations module, which is the very first thing that we do with any of our customers on the coaching consulting side. And it ties into all, like Colin said, all of those three strategic elements tie into all of the tactics, but this one really is like the crystallization of your positioning because it's about how to translate your ICP into like hard targets that you actually go out and target, go and reach out to. So if you're thinking about you've built your ideal customer profile, because that's part of the elements that you start off with. You need to think in the definition of that, what criteria do companies need to meet in order to be a strong fit for our solution? And now I won't dive into how exactly you figure that out because you're going to figure that out when you do the positioning work. But the criteria and types of parameters that you need to set for an ideal customer are things like headcount, revenue, what tools they're using, what use case you could have with them. And those type, there's plenty more, but I'll give you those as a taster. And a subset of your ICP are your buyer personas. So that's the actual decision maker that is going to purchase the solution from you within the company that fits your ICP. But your buyer persona is not the only person you have to care about. There is a whole buying committee. So let's start with your one economic buyer. Who's their title? What is their title rather? What's their seniority level? What department of the business do they work in? What business unit do they work in? But who else makes up the buying committee? Who influences that buyer? Who could detract from a sale? Who could be a champion, like an end user that says to their boss, I'd really like this. And they're quite an influence on that sale. And then looking overall at your targets, how can you segment them? Like Carrie said, if you just target all of these guys with one message at one time, it's not going to work. Doesn't matter how many parameters you threw on there, it's not good enough. You've got to segment it into the smallest groups of like users or like customers that you can, so that when you reach out to them, your outreach feels like one-to-one, even though it's one-to-many. Because you want to be able to scale a little bit to make things cost-effective in sales development. So how can you segment these groups? How can you break them down? Is it by jobs to be done? Is it by pain points? Is it by aspirations for buyers? So what differentiates one segment from another? And then how do you actually translate in this into lists of contacts? Where do you reliably and affordably source contact information for this? Is it a case where you should be building out an internal research team that can go out and do that scraping? Can you buy a data subscription with either the big guys like, you know, ZoomInfo, all those guys, all the way down to the more boutique providers? Can you outsource that role? Just either way, how can you consistently get quality data so that you can go and reach this target? And then finally, what do you need to know about a prospect before you can effectively reach out to them? All of those are kind of the tactics that you need to consider to do this part of the playbook properly, the targeting. And what comes after targeting, Carrie?
Once you have that figured out, the next piece is, okay, how are you going to do that? You need people, right? You need a team. And so the key piece in team and building a proper team is, you know, you want to get these folks in the driver's seat. They are your road warriors to get this stuff done and get it off the ground. So typically what we do is, again, from a strategic importance and the value of how to do this, it is better. Two is better than three, and two is better than one. Because ideally you want to onboard in at least a segment or a set of two, because that way that any of the teachings and learnings that you're doing, if you're A/B testing, if you're doing outreach, you have at least a couple of folks involved in testing some of that messaging. Did you pick the right buyers and targets, et cetera? And so two is golden, three is a crowd in terms of being able to pick the team and start to launch that. And ultimately, the next piece of that is making sure that they know the rules of the road, if you will. You know, they're your road warriors, as I mentioned, but like, do they know their job roles and responsibilities? Do they know what types of specific skills and the KPIs that they're going to be required to perform? How many calls a day? How many outreaches? You know, how many touches does it take to really get somebody to actually call you back? And are they tenacious enough? And what are some of those characteristics and attributes? And I might be getting into the take action here of Sarah, but the importance of the team is making sure that you really have a dynamic duo to be able to represent and test and take that forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things to consider sort of tactically when deciding what exactly those roles are, because we can give you what we think is a great blueprint for a team, and it usually incorporates 4 to 5 roles. You've got your inbound response MRR, you've got your outbound prospector SDR, you've got a closer AE, and then you've got the customer success account manager, whatever that role ends up being. We maybe would throw in some sort of manager to oversee that if there isn't somebody already, but in the case where this is like a sales leader building a team, that might be you. But we can give you that. And with the full knowledge that that does not fit every company, and going back to the pace idea, you can't hire all four at once. We're not telling you like day one, no ROI, hire four people. That's your road to predictable revenue. So you've got to consider up first, what are the tasks that need to be completed now? What are the skills that are needed to complete those tasks? And then what are the kind of behaviors that would make those skills better, that would make the person a better fit? Like Carrie's saying, do they need to be like a prospector, for instance? Do they need to be kind of like, tenacious, not care about rejection, creative, determined? Do they need to be an account manager or CS, someone that's like a little bit more understanding, thoughtful, empathetic, all that kind of stuff? So you got to think about both the tasks, then the skills, then the behaviors that are required, and you build the job around that. It might fall into these traditional job descriptions, might not. And then in that way, you can build the team that suits your immediate needs and your budget, and you layer in the people that need to take on the additional tasks as those things need to happen. What comes after that, after team?
We're all in the T's here. We got the targeting, we've got the team, now we've got the tools. And I've had some allusions, if you will, to the cars. You know, you're in the driver's seat, you know, headlights versus taillights. And, you know, this is, to me, it's all about the car parts, right? The key critical parts that make up the car. It's the same thing when you talk about the tools that you need in order to actually build a proper outbound sales engine. And so you know, minimum viable product is similar to a minimum viable tool stack. You need the minimum to start and then grow it. And so what do we mean by that? So a great customer relationship management system, right? Everybody knows Salesforce. There's many others obviously out there, but you definitely need a sales CRM. You need a sales engagement tool in order to be able to track, in order to be able to define sequences really, really quickly. You need a dialer, auto dialers, et cetera. You've got to have social and video and alias emails. There's a whole set, but there is a minimum viable tool stack that really is comprised of those key things. And it's similar to just the basics of a car, right? You need the frame, you need the engine, you know, you need the tires, and that's just what you need. And that's the strategy and really being able to grow quickly to thereafter.
Yeah, for sure. And when it comes to choosing what of the myriad of tools that are out there that fit each of those sort of descriptions or jobs that they're taking on in your sales development machine, car, in the car, because we're still in the car, you got to think about, yeah, you need those basic functions to be done. You need something that is going to manage your contacts, your accounts, all that stuff. So nothing gets lost. You need something that's going to help you actually do your outreach, and you need to be able to pick up the phone. Those are like absolute bare minimums. So think about the kind of, again, the budget, the pace, what can you afford to spend on this stuff right off the bat? Maybe right off the bat, you're doing like a end-to-end sales engagement with the CRM. Things like HubSpot are going to cover both of those things for you, or are you diving straight in for things like outreach and Salesforce at the same time? Colin's making a face with my HubSpot. And how much do you need to automate your outreach? Because when we're thinking about the lower average deal size, it means we need a little bit more automation. We're going to need help with the automation. If we're going real account based, like huge account based, you might be able to go pretty ad hoc with your emails, and then you need a little bit less functionality in that sales engagement tool. So you're thinking about, how much do I need to automate? What volume of outreach do my prospectors need to achieve in order to meet the revenue goals that I need? And what tools are going to help me do that? That it's all got to come down to pace, goals, all that kind of stuff. But another thing to consider is where your prospects spend their time. So where can you be online that your prospects are online? So when we talk about, you know, social accounts, that kind of stuff, it might not be LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the big one for SaaS, might not be LinkedIn. So where are they? Where do they like to be prospected? Where do they like to educate themselves, share content, and how can you put yourself there, and what tools can help you do that? Okay, Colin, you can talk.
Thanks. This is how it works. This isn't just a podcast thing. This is how it actually works when I'm in a meeting with Sarah and Carrie. So I just want to jump in, like, as somebody who's led a sales development team, speaking to people that are maybe listening to this thinking, oh, how do I build my first sales development team? Do it all manually first. Do it yourself for like a week. Don't do it forever, because the automation will save you. There are so many things that are going to happen. There's a huge volume of task work, and it is impossible to keep all of these things in your head. And one of the most critical pieces of sales development, and not just for the reps, but for the AEs as well, is managing that long-term follow-up. This is something that humans are. I would use different words if we weren't on a podcast, but let's just say something terrible at. We are very, very bad at. It's very hard to do. And this is one of those places where you can lose and a humongous amount of value. So I just want to point it out, do it manually first. If you're the sales development leader, if you're the first sales development rep, because it'll help you learn and figure out, like, wow, this really sucks to do in Gmail and Salesforce in a spreadsheet. This is awful, but it's a great learning experience, so that when you do implement something like a sales loft or an outreach or whatever you choose to use, there's lots of good tools out there, and I certainly don't know them all. But when you, it'll add so much context for how important these things are to really help your sales development reps and your AEs stay on top of what they need to do and make sure nothing slips through the cracks. And now back to you, Gina.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Let's talk about the next element of this good old playbook.
Yeah, so the playbook, we've had a lot of T's. Now we're going to go into the P's again. It's all about prospecting. And so, you know, you've done your targeting, right? You've set up your team. You know, now you've got some base tools by which to go. But the key now is, okay, how do we do this, right? We're going to prospect. And so the key part in this stage is all about enabling the team, enabling your company to really get an understanding of all the different pieces and parts. Document those successes, right? So as you're going out and prospecting, that you keep track of how people are replying. Do you understand, again, when even the best time of day might be to go and outreach to people? Back to what Sarah mentioned about, you know, where they are, it's also their time of day, conversations, you know, different types of sequences and messaging that you might need to factor in. If all of these things that you're doing as you're going out and prospecting into these buyers and into these accounts isn't captured in some way, shape, or form, or isn't, again, put in your head taken rather out of your head and put on paper in a playbook of sorts, then you're going to lose a lot of potential momentum, let alone resiliency as well in the business and being able to grow and scale it and iterate on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And seeing the kind of experimentation that happens that our clients are doing, especially when there's a couple of different people that are going about the prospecting and you get like one person tries this sequence design, another person clones that sequence, makes a change. And all of a sudden we get this thing where it's like a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone. And like, it has no semblance of anything that's ever worked. And then you've got 1,000 sequences that you're dealing with and you just don't know where to come back to. So things that need to be tracked include the channels that work best. Do you get your responses on email, phone, social? Because then you focus your outreach in those places. I'm not saying eliminate the others, but you got to know what works best and leverage it. The type of language that your prospects like to use. Are they technically inclined? Are they creative, analytical? How can you find that out and how can you leverage that in your outreach? And this should be kind of discovered from deep research that you do on industries, markets, the companies, the personas, and the competitors in your space. All of that can inform this outreach and should be documented and tracked. And then as you're going, how can you set benchmarks for your outreach that you can continue to try to surpass in terms of like success metrics? So like open rates, response rates, positive response rates, conversion rates, depending on channel, you'll call it different things, but we need to figure out what actually works and not get stuck on some of these kind of vanity metrics like open rates and constantly be pushing to improve and not fall back to, oh, we accidentally just let 700 prospects move through a sequence that is performed worse than any of our historic sequences. Like, no, you got to be able to draw the line when that experiment is over, document your learnings and move forward. And so that's the kind of last tactical piece of prospecting is the process for experimentation. Who's in charge of that at your company? How do you make sure that the data that you glean from an experiment is clean and then captured? And how do you document those learnings? Where are they documented? How do you disseminate the learnings among the team? And then coming back to kind of benchmarks, what are other prospectors in your space doing that you can try? I will say the number one reason that I was any good at my job as an SDR is because I copied other people. I didn't make anything up. I was on LinkedIn. I was following all of the kind of thought leaders in the sales space and trying out stuff of theirs, amalgamating a few different things, adding my own spin on it. And that is the only reason that I was successful in my role. Colin was no help. It was not the training. It was just the stuff from other people. So keep an eye, like ear to the ground in what's working and keep that experimentation up.
I don't disagree with anything that you just said there.
I want to comment on that though, because I think that's a massive point too. And that as much as things do change, they also still in a way stay the same. Like the foundations and the methodology and that playbook, if you will, is what stays the same. This is kind of tried and true, back to Colin's point earlier, thousands and thousands and thousands of emails and outreaches and whatnot. And while there's different tactics and ways and nuances, the basics and the foundation is there. So, you know, putting yourself in that mindset of here's how it's done. Here's my, literally my roadmap, if you will. It's just critical. And it's a critical factor in success of customers that we've seen that have come to us that actually do get it and actually do it versus ones that really don't.
Yeah, you're totally right. Like the strategy that we're talking about, the principles, the strategic importance of each of the elements in the playbook, I don't see changing. We're not talking about like use a channel. We're saying figure out the channel that works. For right. instance, the tactics are going to change and they're going to change quickly. They've changed even in the time that I've been working with predictable revenue. So yeah, good point, Carrie. Yeah. So the strategic elements, keep them, keep the thought behind that in your playbook forever and for always. And then just update your tactics as they come along. Let's talk about qualification.
Yeah. So next sort of chapter, if you will, in the playbook, which is all about the qualifications. So I kind of liken this to dating, right? It's kind of all about, are we a fit, right? Is your product or your service a fit for the customers and the prospects that you're looking to obviously bring in and reel in? And so making sure that there's a really clear objective on what that qualification criteria is, because after you've got done the prospecting, you want, you know, the outbound reps to ideally book a meeting and have a successful handoff to the account executives so that ultimately you can drive top of funnel pipeline. But that qualification criteria is key. So whether or not there is a termination of the key elements on that, right? What is uniquely identifiable that's going to meet or exceed to say, yes, check mark, I am a qualified candidate prospect because I meet these criteria A, B, C, D. And so it's like a, again, round of speed dating, right? Are we a fit? Yes, no. If not, then fine, you know, disconnect and move on. But you want to find those that are. And Sarah will talk a lot more about what the specific actions are to help you to do that.
Yeah, totally. So one of the things that we come back to time and time again with outbound is that the outbound ICP is not the same as who you would work with if they came in through inbound. Especially when we're talking about like pace and the pricing elements that go into that and the kind of cost, your opportunity cost is greater with outbound because you're spending time, that person spending time, you're getting data, you've got the tools, there's money being spent to get these prospects in the door. So you need to set minimum baseline average deal size that you'll take for outbound and the qualification criteria that then allow you to identify, as Carrie said, who meets those criteria for this type of deal. So what do you need to know about the persona? What do you need to know about the company that they work for, the potential use cases, potential projects, the technology that they're using that you could integrate with, the pain points, their priorities? Those are some examples of the things that could make up your qualification criteria. And then how can you create what we call an AWAF, or are we a fit, call script that blends your qualification questions naturally into a conversation so that you still are having a good conversation. The person wants to get on the next conversation, but you're making sure that they do meet these criteria. And the only opportunities that end up in that AE pipeline are worth the squeeze because someone has spent a bunch of time prospecting and that AE is going to spend a bunch of time closing. And so the return on investment or CAC or whatever we want to call it in this context has got to make sense. And in your qualification, because you're making sure that they're the right type of people and they care and you're building value, you're going to reduce the no-show rate. You're going to increase opportunity quality. If an opportunity falls outside of those qualification criteria, but might still be a good opportunity, who do you go to make that final call? These are just other things to kind of consider around the qualification piece, but most important, like, you know, integral element is baseline qualification criteria that they need to meet before they are considered an opportunity instead of just a prospect, a contact. And then there's just one more element of the playbook, but it's important.
This is a biggie. I'm a huge fan of this one, and it's incredulous how many times you see companies and or individuals not do it. And I'm talking about follow through. I talk a lot about 360 degree feedback and being able to close loop on things and, you know, whatever words you want to choose, but it's follow through. So once the qualification criteria has been met and that prospector, that outbound SDR hands off to that AE or whatever role that you define, there has to be a set process by which they hand off each and every time and document the notes and be able to maximize the opportunity to then refine and be able to go forward again, lessons learned, et cetera. So they've got to schedule the discovery or demo call. They certainly want to make sure that once the prospector is off the line, that they're emailing them, closing the loop that way, introducing that closer, reiterating the purpose of the call, adding value at every single step. And then of course, making sure that you basically wrap it up with a bow. Because you do not want to just, okay, next steps over to the closer, and then there's nothing else that happens. They don't connect. The customer or the prospect doesn't know what's happening, let alone there's nothing in your CRM to even record any of the notes and that handoff. So it's huge. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. I think follow through is such a perfect term for it because we're thinking about like golf. Your golf swing, follow through is huge, right? You're always like, keep pointing in the direction of the ball. Don't look, whatever. I don't actually play golf. I like have hit at a driving range one time. But if you think about it in those terms, if you swing to the ball and then you stop, the ball's going to like bloop, like maybe like 4 yards. And you're going to be like, why did it not land on the fairway, which is where I'd like it to be, which is where we'll say the closed deal is. Well, it's because you didn't follow through. There are things that take it past the booking that first meeting, past the opportunity and continue that momentum. And the momentum absolutely dies if you don't have a clear follow through process. So you need to think about what the templates are and the scripts that you can create to make the handoff process easy and frictionless and standardized. What information needs to go into the CRM so that when the AE has the next conversation, nothing is reiterated. The prospect doesn't answer a single same question. They know that you guys have communicated offline. And then think about how and why opportunities can get accepted or rejected, and how feedback is given on both of those things. So that, as Carrie said, you're always improving, you're constantly moving towards better, stronger qualification criteria and therefore better opportunities. And what happens after an opportunity is qualified to ensure it makes it through the pipeline. Now that gets into the whole like negotiation, persuasion, a whole bunch of stuff that's sort of out of the realm of the top of funnel sales development, but it does make a huge difference. You can nail the sales development. And if you're, you know, your closers are not doing the follow through and kind of taking that and running with it, doesn't matter how much effort you put into the first chunk of stuff, it's just not going to go anywhere.
Go ahead, John.
Yes.
This is one where I'm like, oh, I've seen so much value wasted here. You know, like the inbound and outbound are different, right? And they need to be handled. You know, we talked about qualification, we talked about follow through. These inbound deals need to be handled differently than outbound deals. It's a par three course versus a par five, par six course.
Yeah.
With like dog leg left around some sand traps. I sound like I know how to golf, but I'm horrible. And so they need to be handled differently. And I've seen so many companies waste so much value by having their SDRs queue up these great meetings and then their AEs jump on and they use an inbound script or call flow or whatever. And then you just watch the opportunity fizzle. You're like, the AE jumps on, they're like, so what do you want? And the customer's like, what do you mean? Like you called me, you got the SDR. Like this is a momentum game. You're pushing a rock up a hill and it's not rolling downhill yet. With an inbound deal, they're rolling downhill because there's motivation there. And that's what gives it the momentum. With outbound, there's no momentum yet, but they're the right shaped rock, to stretch this analogy. You know, so it's like you're pushing the right rock. There's just no momentum yet. You haven't reached the top of that hill. And I think this is such a critical one. And just to recognize that there's this 90-day fallacy that I've run into so many times, and it drives me insane. And it's that if there's no project or there's no forward movement on something within 90 days, we don't want to talk to them. That's bullshit. They're absolutely, if they are the right person at the right company and there is pain there, you absolutely want to be having this conversation. The best salespeople I know get into the deals early. Yes, it's more work. Yes, it takes longer. Yes, you should be following through on these. And so whether it's your AE or your SDR, this is just one of those critical pieces where you can absolutely watch just tons of great value slip through the cracks. It's like a beautiful drive and you put it right up on the fairway and then you turn around and you're like, no, I don't like the color of this ball. I'm going to putt it into the sand trap and leave it there. Like this is the analogy that I see. I've seen a lot of people make that. So obviously I feel passionate about it. I'll calm down and let you take back over.
No. I mean, that's kind of it. So we walked through the strategic elements, those three pieces that go right up top that are the table stakes, or as it's actually put in the methodology, it's a chain link. What is it? A chain link something.
Chain link system. And if there's a book that I'm pulling the idea from, it's called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy. And they talk about chain link systems. And it basically, chain link logic is a system where the performance of the whole is limited by the weakest link. And so how we talked about the score and my fantastic math at the top of this episode, if you've got one of those things that's a zero, it's going to have a downstream impact on everything. It's going to limit the performance of the entire system. And I think that was just the last piece to impress upon everybody that this is a system. The sales development organization is an extension of the revenue organization, which is an extension of the product organization, which is an extension of the company. These things don't live or exist in a vacuum. And so the performance of one is going to be impacted by the performance of all the others. And I think that's the key message and the reason why we split it into principles and the playbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally makes sense. And similarly, like the playbook itself, though it is a subset of practice, which is one of those strategic elements, it also forms a chain link system. You can't avoid one of those pieces in anywhere in this whole methodology, which is why we've touched on all of the pieces and identified them for you. What about the milestones? Like, what if we're starting from scratch, what are we working towards and through?
Great question. And I think we've intentionally not put timelines on these because every company is going to be different. Different offering, different product, different position in the market, different team, different investment strategy, different playbook. But the things to look for when you're trying to figure out, okay, where am I at and what are some common bottlenecks, right? The first thing is like getting that first meeting booked, right? And if maybe we'll do a different podcast on like, what are the bottlenecks around these? Cause this could be another half an hour and we're already, pretty deep here, but what is that first meeting? Where's that first meeting? And like, that's really that first milestone. You want to see that first one booked, and then you're going to start to see them repeating, right? And then there's that first opportunity created, and all of these are moments to celebrate, right? So have you created that first opportunity? Are you seeing regular recurring meetings being booked? Then after, obviously, first opportunity created comes first deal closed, right? And then you're going to start to see, hopefully the back, everything behind this, all those other milestones hitting consistency as you moved forward towards the next milestone, which is that consistent pipeline, right? And so you're seeing closed deals, consistent pipeline building. The last one is consistent closing or predictable revenue.
Ding, ding, ding.
It's a long walk to get there. But yeah, we had to go there. I apologize, but we had to say it. It's that last milestone. It's what people hire us for. It's what people hire the book for. It's what people hire the methodology for. It's what ultimately it's what you're here, what you're listening for is you want to create consistent, scalable customer acquisition channels that create regular revenue or predictable revenue. So like that's the whole purpose here. And the goal, the reason we're having this podcast, the reason we're sharing all this content is to share that this is a process. It's a system. We're trying to provide that sort of map inside the tornado, because it's crazy, it's hard, and it's very challenging if you're a new sales leader trying to figure out, okay, well, I've got some things and they're working, but this isn't working and I'm not seeing revenue yet. And so I've seen so many people pick up sales development and be like, oh, this is a great tool, get excited about it, do a bunch of things, and then they get caught at one of these milestones, or they get caught at, maybe they were off on their targeting, and so it just multiplies everything by zero. And so our hope and our purpose and the reason we're doing this is to provide you with that map to say, okay, if you're here, this is where you want to look. If you want us to do a podcast on, what are those milestones? What are those bottlenecks? Hit us up on social media and that'll tell the marketing team that we need to do this. And we'll get Sarah, Carrie and I back and we'll have that conversation. But that was the last piece I wanted to add, is just have a look for those milestones, making sure that you're sort of setting some reasonable goals, realistic goals, and paying attention to like, where are we at in the process? Because this is a process. And if you're stuck, just know that you're probably just a couple tweaks away. So keep pushing.
Nice. Any last thoughts, Carrie?
Mine is, we've talked about the map and it's so critical, because the last company I was at was a commissions-based software company. And it was all about setting up commissions, and companies used to just set commissions and that was it. They set them for the year and they would never look at them again. And so this sales development playbook and this methodology is a map to be able to then go back and figure out where you are today as things change, as the market moves, as your customer potential, as your targeting changes. You can literally go back through each segment and each piece of this book and almost audit yourself, right? How are we doing in targeting? Have we actually looked at the team lately? What about the follow through? And so I think it's a fantastic, again, map, guide, recipe, whatever you want to call it, but it will keep you, again, headlights versus taillights. It will keep you really focused on the road ahead.
Exactly.
Nice. I don't have anything more to add. So Colin, take us home.
I get the CTA. That's mine. Cool.
Yeah.
So you've heard a little bit about what makes the sales development methodology and the pieces of it, how it kind of fits together. We know it's a lot to digest. And so we're going to be sharing a 2-part workshop series, November 22nd and December 9th. It's going to be a discussion if you've been to some of the predictable revenue stuff, you know, it's pretty casual. It's going to be kind of like a live stream. We may live stream it. We may not. It might just be a Zoom thing. We'll kind of figure that out, but we want to have a chat with you. We want to have a discussion, answer your questions. If there's something from here that didn't make sense, come hit us up. I'll be there. Sarah will be there. Kara will be there. And we'll talk about probably actually at different stages. I don't think all of us are going to be there at all of them. So don't quote me on that. I don't run the marketing. I just show up and talk and read the little blurb. And I'm not even doing a good job of that. I see why they kicked me off the podcast, why I don't do these anymore. But if you're curious, if this sounds awesome, there's a link where you can register in the show notes. And so check us out there.
Are we going to wear the same color again, like without actually planning it next time too? Should we do that?
Maybe next time you guys can let me know. Yeah. That'd be nice.
We were scheming ahead of time. Be like, oh, let's make Sarah look like a jerk.
So after like, what's this? Colin in color and carrying the same one. It doesn't happen often.
Oh, nice. Oh, well, yeah. Hopefully next time. Maybe we'll let you guys know. And in the audience, you can all wear the same shirt too.
Yeah. You can do a poll.
Cool. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
All right.
We'll catch you next time.
Good to see y'all.
Bye.
Bye.